John's just down the road from us.
Yeah.
In Lambton, Kent.
Small town in Tilbury.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, everyone. It's 6 o'clock. We are going to start officially now. We've been unofficially started for probably 10 minutes. Welcome to the Global Math Department. If you are just joining us, please go ahead and introduce yourselves in the chat window. Say where you teach, what you teach, and you might consider including your Twitter handle.
Awesome.
Nice.
My name is Colin. I will be your host tonight.
Windsor.
But before I introduce and turn over to our speakers, I want to tell you a little bit about Global Math Department. We are here every Tuesday talking about some new math topic. Meetings are recorded, so I have already started the recording, and they're available usually a few hours after the meeting ends. So you can come back to the same URL that you used when you got in here this evening. I always encourage you to share with your friends and have them watch afterwards, because every presentation I've watched has always been amazing. The Global Math community prides itself on being friendly and supportive, so that chat window is there for topical and general conversation. And either I or John or Kyle will catch your questions as they're going through the chat window, so please feel free to put your questions in there. I just want to tell you a little bit about the speakers tonight. So the first speaker is Kyle Pierce. Kyle's a K-12 math consultant with the Greater Essex County District School Board, where his passion for mathematics fuels him to uncover creative ways to spark curiosity and fill sense-making through the inquiry process using tasks that are contextual, visual, and concrete. When he's not working on the next media-rich contextual math task, he's spending time with his wife and two children. He shares his most recent noticings, wonderings, reflections, and resources in mathematics content knowledge and pedagogy by delivering workshops across North America and blogging. I will put the blog site and both our Twitter handles in the chat window. In addition, John Orr will be speaking with Kyle. John is a math teacher at John McGregor Secondary School in the Lambton Kent District School Board in Ontario, Canada. When not teaching his students and spending time with family, he leads workshops and presentations on teaching pedagogy in the math classroom. As an Apple Distinguished Educator and Desmos Fellow, he routinely talks about implementing technology in his classroom. Lately, he's excited about promoting struggle in his students and talking math with primary aged kids while creating math prompts for mathbeforebed.com. You can follow his classroom lessons, routines, and educational thoughts. And again, I will put the website and the Twitter handles in the chat window so that you have them there. But without further ado, because I know they have a lot of really good stuff, I will hand it over to them. Take it away, gentlemen.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We are honored to see so many people in, some of us still on summer vacation, getting ready to start up. Some of us already in school, as we saw in the chat. So we want to dive right in. Usually we like to have about 90 minutes for this.
Yeah, we got a jam-packed session here. We gotta cram it in.
Yeah, so we're gonna get going. We're gonna do, like, you know, our early years of teaching and just jam through all kinds of math content. Hopefully we are good to go. So the first thing we want to do, though, is we want to have a little fun with you. John came across a little game. John, what are we gonna do here?
I don't know. I've been playing this game with my students for, like, since I started teaching. I play with my kids too at home. I'm still kind of learning the rules of the game, and I'm sure some of you have played this game, but I do need a volunteer. And you can use the chat window to play this game. That's not that, like, anyone. Oh, somebody raised their hand.
We're going to go. That was quick.
Oh, Evelyn, that was nice.
There
nice.
Is a hand raise tool.
All right. So let's go with that.
Evelyn, you're in.
You are in. Okay. So here's how this game works. There is 21 sticks in a pile. Some of you may know what game this is, but there's 21 sticks in a pile. When it is your turn, you can take between one and three sticks out of the pile. And when it's my turn, I also have those exact same options. Now, the object of the game is the winner is the person that will take the last stick or group of sticks from this pile. So Evelyn, would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first to show you how it works? But I'll wait for a message in the chat box there, whether you wanna go first or go first.
Little modeling.
Yeah, I will start easy. Kyle is going to control the window here. I'm just going to take one stick out of this pile. Go ahead, Kyle. Make that work.
Boom. Oh, we've got 20 left.
Okay. Evelyn, how many sticks would you like to take out of the pile? Two. Ooh. All right. Two.
If my math is correct, I think you're down to 18.
Okay. You know what, Evelyn? I'm going to match that. I am also going to take two.
Oh, I almost clicked the wrong one.
And your turn.
Back to Evelyn. The ball or the sticks are in her court.
And I can hear all the people playing at home. Like, you can't hear them, but I know they're all just being like, oh, I take this buddy. Evelyn, your turn.
Yeah, Evelyn's thinking long. Oh,
she's like, she's going right. She's like playing this out like chess.
Yeah. Or Googling. No Googling.
Ball. One, two, or three sticks.
Ball. Is that code?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
One, two, or three sticks. What does ball mean? Right.
Yep. Ruth, we're with you there. Evelyn, how many? You can take one, two,
or three.
I hope she's not trying to say bail, like she wants to bail on the game.
Oh,
that wouldn't be very
fun. It's okay.
Three. She says three. Right. She's like, all right, here we go. We're back at it. Okay. We're back at three. John, I think she threw you a curveball. Okay.
I'll take one. I'll knock that down one spot.
Okay. Back to Evelyn. What are you
getting down to a two?
I'm super excited.
What'd she say? She says
one.
One. Okay. One. All right. I am going to, do what you did before. I'm going to take three.
Ooh. Are you just trying to throw her off your trail?
All right. We're getting close.
Interesting. All right. Back to Evelyn. What's Evelyn thinking here? Evelyn.
We are at eight.
Now we're like strategic competence is just like
two
flowing. We are down to six.
Six left in the pile. What should I take? We're getting close. Okay. I'm going to take two sticks out of this pile.
All right.
This is back to you, Evelyn.
She says one.
Okay. I will take all remaining sticks, and I am the winner of this game.
Ooh. Would you go as far as to say you are the world champion?
I'm pretty good. You know, sometimes, like, I wonder if, did anyone see, like, what happened there at four? That when I left Evelyn with four. Evelyn, did you know that it was over at four?
Yes, and actually, we should give a round of applause for Evelyn. It's so weird because, like, we don't know what's going on the other end of this computer. But, like, a round of applause for Evelyn. Everybody's, thank you so much for joining. She was participating before she even knew what this game was. So I love that. That was excellent. Jenny says four is a magic number.
It is a magic number in this game. And I know, like, most people, like, a lot of us would knew that at four, it's like, the game is over. There's nothing I can do from this point on. But I'm wondering if, now think of this game like this, that the game is to get to four. If I can leave my opponent with four, then no matter what, I can win after that. So now the game, let's scratch the old game. It's not who can get to zero, it's who can get to four. So now if the game is who can get to four, what would be the next magic number that I would want to leave my opponent with so that they would have no option? And we're seeing some people say eight. And eight, you know, like if they get to eight, then no matter what, it's the same thing. Let's back this up again. Like, let's keep, you know, hammering out this game to see what happens. Like, now the game is who can get to eight. So if the game is who can get to eight, what's the next magic number?
Evelyn's like, I want a replay.
She does want a replay. So then 12 is the next magic number, and then 16 and then 20.
Oh, Mark jumped straight to 20.
Right.
He's like, don't even bother with 16.
Right. And so think about the start of this game, that there was 21 sticks in the pile. And the move that wins this game is who can get to 20. And you can think like who has the first move in this game has a winning strategy of winning this game. And why we bring this up, because I play this with my students a lot, and especially on the first day. It's like a really good first day kind of end class problem. And I even put money down on the table. I'll put like a $10 bill and say, I am the world champion of this game. Who wants to play me in this game? And I will give you this money if you win. And so usually I will end up going first, because you notice how when I said to Evelyn, would you like me to show you who to go first? Like if she had gone first, she not knowing the strategy, chances are that I could probably get down to a multiple of four somewhere in there. But when I play with the students, that money comes out on the table. It's kind of fun. But we bring this up is because every time I play this game, it reminds me of my actual experience as a student in math class. And not for a game aspect. It's kind of like think of it like this. In this game, the person who knows the strategy, they know all the moves, they know how this game is going to end. And Evelyn and other people playing the game that didn't know this strategy, you're making moves at the beginning of this game, but not knowing how it's going to end. And you're kind of just making moves blindly and hoping for the best when it gets close to the end. And, you know, as a math student, that's what I did. I was following the teacher, and the teacher was the person that knows all the rules of the game. The teacher knows where the path is leading. I was the student. I was like Evelyn. I was blindly following that teacher's moves, hoping for a great outcome in the end. And, you know, sometimes like I was a good math student. You know, I followed those rules well. And a lot of us are like that. And sometimes I followed those rules so well, it awarded me something like this. Like this is my exercise book from grade four. And I pulled this, my mom actually pulled this out of the archives back in, you know, November. And I got this Master Multiplier Award. I don't know if you guys had a Master Multiplier Award or not, but this thing, like this is a sticker.
Look at this sticker.
And this is like not a normal sticker, right? Like this, you guys, this is a puffy sticker. This is one of those stickers that like you could close the book and it doesn't close all the way. You guys had, like, it's also a hologram sticker.
Mark
so
saying yes.
Yeah, like you guys know what that kind of sticker is like. But, you know, I got the Master Multiplier Award, and that's because I was following the rules of the game. But, you know, later that same year, we were looking through the archives of my grade four stuff. Following the rules was great, except for the part where I was, you know, push comes to shove and I had to show some understanding. And this was my grade four test on multiplying. It says 8 out of 8 says terrible. You see the teacher's comment right there. Like that's the actual teacher's comment. This is
the first iteration of descriptive feedback, right, in his district.
Right. Like terrible. Sure. Work carefully. And so so when I think of the game that we just played, like I was that student and this is a memory that sticks with me. Like even today, like when that came out, I remembered that. Like it wasn't, I remembered all of that sticker and this test, and it stuck with me. And it's a memorable moment that comes with us. And I wonder how many of us have these memorable moments of math class, like whether it was good or bad. Like Kyle, I believe you also have a story that brings to mind about a memorable moment in your math class.
Yeah, like it's kind of interesting. Like John started off very positive, but then he sort of brought, you know, kind of the opposite out. Talking about some of those struggles. For me, mine is actually from post-secondary. I was in second year university, and I was taking my math degree, and all the way through school, I was told that I was a fairly strong, a student who was fairly strong at math. I was quote unquote a math person is what I was told. And I went into second year university and I started failing quite significantly, like drop the class sort of fail. And my professor called me into his office during office hours and he looked me in the eyes and he said, "You don't know anything about math." And that like crushed my soul. You know, not only was that not the most polite way to say it, but, you know, years later, I realized that he was 100% correct. He even went as far as to ask me, he said, "What's a quadratic?" And I remember saying, "I have no idea." You know, I knew the word, but I didn't know what it was. I couldn't describe it. And then he wrote down what I now know is a trinomial. And he said, "Factor this." And I factored it, you know, with my eyes closed, like no issues. And he goes, did you know that's a trinomial that you just factored? He says, you don't know anything about math. And again, so while it was a little bit, you know, not so polite the way he said it, it really started to resonate with me later when I began to teaching. It's when I started to realize that I did not know what I was trying to teach students. So what we want to do is give you just a moment here just to share out in the chat. We're not going to spend too much time on it.
Literally, like we're thinking 1 minute here.
Yeah, 1 minute max in the chat pod. What we're hoping that you're going to share out with us is a math moment. And some of you have already shared some. So as you're sharing in the chat pod, I'll just sort of you know, mention some of the ones that I saw. I saw a few fly by.
Now, it's also it's a good point to bring, like, both of us had, you know, a story that sounded kind of negative in the end, but we would love to also hear like any sort of moment that sticks in your brain about math class. Does not have to be negative or positive. It could just be something that just you, like most of you, when we said that, something stuck in your mind immediately.
Yeah.
So we're going to get 1 minute right here, and then we're going to read a couple. And then we're going to move on.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, before that that experience for me, my memories would have been all positive for the most part, to be honest.
Right.
I was, I'll say, maybe fooled into thinking I was really good at math, but there was lots of pieces that I was missing along the way. And it sounds like Tina had a similar experience in her Algebra 1 teacher. So I see a few coming out. Beating my math arch rival in the math facts chalkboard game.
That sounds like a movie.
Yeah, that's amazing. Luke remembers drill and kill. I see.
They're coming.
Yeah, seeing lots coming in here. Wow, that's awesome, Julie. First female math teacher back in the late 1970s, which is the first time you realize women could be math people too. Like, as much as that's awesome, it's actually sort of soul crushing at the same time, right? But we've come a long way, and we've still got a ways to go. Molly, nice to see you. I didn't see you come into the room. Awesome stuff. 100 facts in 2 minutes. Mad minutes. All right. Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing out. The real work we have for you right now is we want to start thinking about what are the math moments that you actually want to matter for your students.
Right. So, you know, we have all these moments that we're remembering right now, and they're coming to mind. They're flooding in right now, and you're going to read them on the chat window. But what we're wondering is, like if you could scratch that, if you could, you're going to kind of like, let's start over. But you were all math teachers. Like, what is one thing you want your students to remember from math class? Like, just what? Like, just one thing that you wish they remembered from math class 5 years from now, so that if they were in a chat window like this, this is what they typed from your class. We'll give you, again, 1 minute. Feel free to read them, take part, write something. Like, what is that one thing that you want them to remember math class for 5 years?
All right, we're starting to see some coming in. Using mistakes to learn, Patricia says, awesome. I want them to feel empowered. I want them to remember real life contexts we use, the beauty in math. What are you seeing there, John?
Judy says, inquiry can involve failure, but also lead to you to discover exciting things. That's a nice, mistakes are okay. Like that's something that was never, you never made clear to, as a teacher, you know, like when I was going through school, like it was frowned upon, right?
Awesome. Molly's saying that math is fun and it's a fabulous puzzle. Joyful. I love that. Joyful. Patterns and connections. We're seeing lots of great. Oh, resilience came up there from Gerald. Hey, Gerald. Nice to see you. We're seeing lots of friends today. That's excellent.
Right.
What real mathematicians do. Being good at math does not equal being fast. Right. I love Joe Bowler talks about, you know, mathematicians thinking long and hard and slow, like thinking things through. Great stuff. Thank you so much for sharing some of those.
Yeah, like those. And it's so interesting that like what we love asking this question to teachers because it's so interesting. Like we are seeing all these things like, the, you know, resilience here. And we want them to know math is fun. We want them to not worry about mistakes, like all that stuff. Like we want them to remember those things. But kids, like, think about it. Kids aren't actually like, if we're not having those memories. A lot of kids are still not having these kind of memories. They're having those memories that we discussed. And there's like that disconnect. We want them to remember these things, but they're only remembering the other things.
Yeah.
And we think, you know, it's kind of crazy. Like we want them to remember this. And we ask the question, like, what if, right? Like, what if they did remember those things? Like, could we make that happen? Like, what if they could remember that, or how to be resilient problem solvers? Or what if they remembered that memorable lesson that you created in your class? Or what if they remembered how to visualize mental fractions? And then they got to high school and they knew that. Like, what if, like, these, we feel like that these things should come out. And what if they were, like, all those memories that we have now, like, what if they could all be positive instead of those negative memories?
And what's really interesting, when John and I, you know, we were thinking, like, this is over a year ago, about 18 months ago, and we were really trying to, like, hammer down on, like, how do we change our math classrooms? And we started realizing that, you know, these things that we want our students to remember, I didn't see anybody saying quadratics or like factoring or, you know, completing the square, all these ideas. Like, we didn't see those coming out. We saw things like resilience. We saw things like skills that they could apply to math, but then also other areas of their life. And what we've done over the past 5 years is we've encountered so many amazing people online and in person through conferences. I know for me, my big aha moment was the first time I went to a math conference and I got to see Dan Meyer. And I know that John's experience is quite similar. And when I saw three-act math, I was blown away that math class could be something like this.
Yeah. And the big change for me was the mid-boss and like being on Twitter and interacting. It's like there's so much out there, and you know, like we think, like, we put our heads together on all this, and we were saying, like, what is it about the lessons that we're doing now? Because we're doing lessons now where our kids are coming back and saying, like, I did remember that thing. Like Kyle did a lesson he was telling me about on I think proportions and about stacking paper, and he was running it, you know, he went to his grade 10 class, and those kids still remembered the numbers associated in that lesson. They remembered how to use those numbers. Like, they remembered how tall a stack was of paper. Like, kids are remembering some of these things. We put our heads together, like, what is it about these lessons that kids are remembering? And we kind of came up with, like, we call this like the making math moments that matter framework. Like, we know that these lessons can be created. There's not luck. It's like it wasn't luck that lesson worked for Kyle. It's not luck that some of our lessons are hitting home with our students and their understanding and feeling their sense making. We know that they can be created.
So what we've done is we've created this three-part framework, and tonight we're going to be trying to summarize all three, but we're really going to try to dive deep into the first two pieces of the framework. And the first piece of the framework is what we like to call sparking curiosity. And there's so many different ways that we can do this. So what we want to do with you now is kind of take you through and talk about some of the elements that we feel are really important for sparking curiosity. Because it's great to say, yeah, let's go ahead and spark curiosity in our students. But actually going and doing that and being successful has taken us so long. And I'm sure many of you out there feel the same way. Like, it's really learning a bit of an art in order to try to engage our students through curiosity. So, you know, one misconception we have, and John's going to speak to this one, is talking about how, like, making math has to, you know, we have to have real problems that sort of matter in the real world that we can use later in life. So, John, take us through this first example. Like, talk about this one.
Like, if we're going to talk about curiosity and engaging our students, because sometimes people put those hand in hand, like, oh, we have to make our students engaged. And so that will get their curiosity. And a lot of times people will say, okay, there's a fix for that. We will bring in real world kind of problems. Like, we will do this. And look at this example, like, supply and demand is real world. I have to think about this sometimes, but a lot of us are going like, oh man, this is not even real world at all. Like really, does anybody want to solve this problem? Like, this is real, but it's not sparking any sort of curiosity. And what we would argue instead is, we're going to show you this clip right here. I'm going to put it right in here. Oh, Kyle's got, I put the link. You just want to click the link.
Oh, there you go.
Let's see. Make sure that works. It should bring you there, but I'll give you a sec to click that link to watch it. But this is an activity in Desmos. And if you're watching this link, this dot is going to move. And there's nothing real world about this problem at all. These two dots are going to be moving, and you're going to see it on the screen. And the student's job is to move the purple dot so that it lines up with where they anticipate the red and the blue dot to overlap. So there's nothing real at that at all. It's just dots moving on the screen. But I'm going to argue that this is 10 times more curious than the last problem you saw. Like, the last problem was about, oh, we're going to make it real. It doesn't have to be real world at all. We just want some curiosity in there. And so in this particular piece of to spark curiosity, we want students to anticipate. We want them to be like, where is that going to go? So,
In our apologies, that first link didn't work from John, sorry. But I just posted the working link. So the last one works. So give that a little click and you'll see what John's talking about. The next couple examples, we'll try to get that link in there real fast. So as we're talking, just go ahead. As soon as you see the link, just give it a click and your screen will open a new tab. So you don't have to worry about losing us. You'll still be able to hear us speaking over the video. Awesome stuff. So great job there, John, talking about that one. Here's a second one. Like, you know, we talk about relevance a lot, and sadly, you know, what these words mean from one person to the next can oftentimes be very different. So I just want to attack, you know, a problem like this one. And we talk about how, like, math has to be relevant, as if relevance is all we need. Every student can relate to a candle burning. Like, we've had lots of birthdays and, lots of birthdays. Kids know how to light candles. They've blown out candles. But this problem is not sparking curiosity. So what we're going to do is we're going to pop over and we're going to give you maybe another way that we can take the same problem and make it a little more curious. So John's just tossed that link in there. This is kylep.ca/snippet2. And just take a moment to just watch that clip. And let's think about what makes this task or this video, how does it take this problem and make it curious when the reality is it's the same problem on the surface? And awesome. Nick's saying he's used it before. Awesome. This one's called Candle Burning and it's up on my site, or just Googling Candle Burning 3-Act will bring this one up. My apologies for the use of the vice grips holding the camera candle up. That's all I got. So I'm wondering, take a moment and just in the chat, as we continue going, like, what about that video makes it curious compared to the previous example here? And then we're going to go on and John's going to talk about our third curiosity example. Go ahead there, John.
Yeah, this one, to bring it back to, like, sparking curiosity, let's make it real world. Let's give them something to shoot for. The other thing that I did, I am guilty of this for sure, as a starting math teacher, not even as a starting math teacher. Like, I sometimes still do this. You think that, you know, changing the name in the problem is going to make kids want to solve that problem more. So it's like, not Maya. Well, we'll make it Toby, or then we'll make it not him. We'll make it me. We'll put a kid's name in there. We know. And then, so like I'm guilty of that sometimes, but that is not going to, you know, dive in and make them want to solve this problem. Like, I'm more of a fan of, like, withholding the information. Like, withholding information is key for us. The other thing is, like, you could also change the scenario. It's like not about flower beds anymore. It's about pig pens. Oh, okay, that's weird. Is it about No, let's make it about cell phones. Kids love cell phones.
Cell phones, right? Are cool. Okay. They're
they relevant. Always want to sell, you know, solve problems with cell phones. But we are a big fan of withholding information. So if what we could do is let's watch this clip right here, because this one adds like mystery. Give this one a watch. What we want to do is take everything away and let them ask for it. And this one adds a little bit of mystery to that. And that's a big, and that's a huge piece,
a big piece
of curiosity, sparking curiosity.
Awesome. Greg's giving you props there. So John had put that one together to take what we had taught. We taught the same course for many years, and we gave many of the same types of problems. And it was like, how do we change this up?
Right. Like, how do I maximize an area? We'll just show you how to do it. No, like, let's add mystery to it. Let's ask kids to wonder what they're seeing. Let's ask kids to notice what they're seeing. And from there, what we do is we build a lesson from that notice and wonder.
Yeah. And the last one is just this idea of, you know, looking at this particular problem again, making it real, making it like part of our everyday life. Here we can talk about everyone's walked out to the parking lot or they've walked outside, and we want to get them drawing graphs in this particular case. So if we take this particular problem and we take a look at this snippet here, John's going to get this one up in the I lied. He's not. He's working on it.
I got it coming.
It's coming. There you go. Like Mark's saying, like, why are you timing your walk, right? The first video, I might not even time the walk at all. I might just have me walking outside. Students are like, why do you got an itch on your foot? Like, what's going on? Rocking your shoe? So what we want to do is we want to put you in a situation where you can, we want to put you in a little bit of a productive struggle. We also want to pique your curiosity a little bit on a problem. And due to time here, we just want to get right to it. So yeah, John, hop right in there. And we're going to start talking a little bit more about curiosity, some of the elements that are important in curiosity. We'll summarize those at the end. And we also want to introduce this idea, our second part of the framework called fueling sense-making. Because for years, John and I tried to be Dan Meyer in our own classrooms, and we failed miserably. Like, we'd take his tasks, we'd try them, and we would fail. We didn't make it curious. So we had a video, and we thought the video was all that mattered, but there's so much more to it. And then once we finally got that working for us, we would get the kids interested, and we'd get them curious, but then we failed to help them make sense of the math. So that's really what we want to focus on in this next section of the presentation.
Like, yeah. And we're going to go through an example in a sec, but just to add to what Kyle just said there is we'd spend so much time getting that curiosity piece nailed down. And we're like, oh yeah, well, our kids are so engaged and our kids are, you know, dying to do the math. And then we would just stop and go back to the way we taught it before. So we would just say, okay, well, let me show you how to solve this problem. And then you'd solve it in the exact same way you would have solved it.
Or you'd pre-teach all the concepts and it would sort of suck out all that curiosity, right?
So we were going to propose not doing exactly that. And we have an example we'd walk through with our students. And we want to put you in our students' spot. We got about a half an hour left and we're going to jump right in here. So for a moment, put two hats on here. One hat, you're a student in our math class. We're going to ask you to do a couple of these things. Hat number two you're going to put on is your hat as a teacher. And this is a lesson that I've used in my ninth grade class. It's a lesson that I know that teachers have used in their fifth grade class. I've even had teachers talk about it in their third grade class. So we want you to, like, when you go through this task, we want you to think about where you could modify it, how you could use it, because we're going to give you the resources for this at the end here. So we want you to put those two hats on as you go through. We're going to ask for some notice and wonders in a moment in the chat box, and then we'll keep things rolling. We're going to try to be pretty quick here for that.
Awesome. So we are going to get you a link into the chat box right there. If you give that a click, we've got a short clip we'd like you to watch. And as you're watching
it's
this
weird
video. Yeah, it's a little odd. You might be confused. It definitely would be one that would be nice to have a chat with a neighbor. So make sure that you try to get into the chat as it's playing. If you can minimize the window, awesome. If not, feel free to share out after you're done watching that video. So go ahead, take that time right now. We'll mute the mic and wait for some action in the chat. Right. For your noticing and your wondering. All right. We are seeing some action there. Judy saying that we're magicians. Who ate more candy we see here? We've got, this is so fun. That's awesome. That's totally welcomed as well in our class. We want students to just whatever comes to their mind. I noticed they are uneating. I love that.
Uneating.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe that. Some might call that throwing up, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's the gross part. That's kind of weird part. I'm going to take this out of my mouth and cheers you.
Yeah, they're eating two types of chocolates. I wonder if they're having a competition. We are very competitive in nature. Yes, reverse would drive my kids wild. Awesome. How many candies did they eat? Two different types. Foil. I noticed they can make foil wrappers fly to them. Reverse candy eating. Lots of stuff.
We're
calories
wizards.
Eaten. Oh man, the stomach aches that we created for ourselves.
Every time we do this problem, Kyle, somebody always says we're wearing, you know, plaid together.
That's a good one. And it was not set up. That's the lame part. That was after just a typical day of work.
All my shirts are plaid.
That's all I got. Lots of plaid. Yeah, the plaid's coming up there. Length of time to unwrap candy. Kirkland. Oh, interesting. So that's where you get your candy there, Gerald. Interesting. That's good to know. Why don't we head out to Manitoba later
this
year?
Maybe his shirts.
Yeah. Oh, Sam says, why wasn't he invited?
I don't think
this might start a fight. Yeah, honestly,
Sam, I don't know. I'm not sure if you wanted to
feel good about this.
It was around Halloween. That's true.
So we've got amazing noticing and wondering that's happened here. And we want to definitely give every student in our classroom a voice here because we're kind of cramped for time here. We're going to just show just a couple of the things that came up in John's class when he did this recently. And then we're going to just land on a problem just so we can dive into some of this fueling sense making.
Yeah, some of this is going to be pretty familiar. You'll notice there's some spelling issues here, but on my desk, one of my students wrote, both wearing plaid. The candy flies in the hand. I wonder why they're doing this. I love the wonder why we're doing this question, by the way. Yeah. It's like, I'm just waiting for that one to come up. So that we can talk about why.
Wonder what they talk about later at the dinner table.
Yeah,
the math teacher's crazy.
Why eat the chocolate? Some people are wondering. Let's go to some wonders. I wonder how much chocolate there was. I wonder how long it took to eat this chocolate. And somebody wants to know how many. Notice right there, it says how many chocolates there were.
I love in the chat. I'm seeing Scott saying, "Do they unchew at the same rate?"
Yes,
that's awesome.
Right.
Like we're just like creating chaos. Right.
And so then I write. You know, I wrote them on the wall of our room and add the name, like many of us do when we do these kind of problems. And what I like to do is I like to go through the wonder questions and go through each one to say, like, which one is like a quantitative answer? Like, which one's going to give us a number type answer? So we ended up circling how much chocolate was there from Justin, but we also kind of frame that to be like, how many pieces of chocolate did I eat? And how many pieces of chocolate did Kyle eat? And that's the question we actually want you to take a stab at. We want you to estimate here, like, how many pieces did I eat? How many did Kyle eat? And what you're seeing is, like, there might be some questions to help narrow that down. We'll take those in the comment window.
Yeah, absolutely. And go ahead. And again, we're kind of going with a gut shot here. Based on what you saw, I will say right away that that was not the entire length of the session that
right.
you saw. So, but what you do see in front of you, or on the screen right now, that is all of the wrappers of John's chocolates and my chocolates combined.
Now some I did scrunch up and throw into a ball.
You get a little bit like angry
right.
at that, yeah. you know, the chocolate's gone and it's disappointing to you.
Right, right. So we want to hear like how many each of us ate. Like if you want to do a combined total, like I guess you're seeing the combined total. But what we Kyle and I like to make it a little competition here for us. So yeah, like, I wonder how many each. Like,
who do you think's like bigger, like a bigger pig? Is it John or I, or like we both equally
Shauna,
pig-like?
Shauna's saying 15 for Kyle and 12 for me. And like many of us do, we also do too high, too low best guess with our students. We want them to go like, what would be unreasonable here? What would be too few here? And what's going to be the best guess here? So we got a range here, Kyle. The most I think I've seen is 25. And the lowest I'm seeing here is maybe 12, 11,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in those, that ranges there. So we're going to get your last ditch effort in here to get an estimate, because we are going to go through this.
Yeah, and we're also going to be sharing out some resources tonight. Like, if you go to makemathmoments.com, you can actually enter your email. You'll get an email. You'll get this placemat that we've created, as well as some other links, including the links to this particular task. So that you can grab it, and some other goodies for you that'll come to your email. So we also have a kind of a little surprise coming up in a couple weeks' time as well. So if you get your name on there, we'll make sure to send it your way. But right now, what we're going to do is we want to keep moving along here. So while there's probably some new wonders in class, we're going to ask students, like, what do they want to know? Like, what are they, you know, what information could we give you? Like, some kids might want to know, like, so how long did it take us to eat this, for example? And, you know, what is that unchew rate? Like, I think it was Nick that asked, or Nick or Tony.
Right. Kids are starting to, like, once you start narrowing it down, kids are starting to actively anticipate how they're going to solve this problem. And for us, that's a huge part of problem solving right now in our classrooms. They're forming strategies in their minds before they have all the information. And when that information starts to come out, that's where those strategies can be like, okay, that's not going to work with that strategy, and this is going to work with this strategy. Like, kids are doing this. This to us is huge for problem solving.
Yeah, if we try to access some of their adaptive reasoning skills before we even introduce numbers, like, we can learn a lot from students, and we can figure out, like, where, like, what are they thinking? Like, on what level are they thinking? Are they thinking about, like, proportional relationships here? Like, are they at an additive stage or a multiplicative stage? Like, it can really give us insight as to how we want to unpack the remainder of this lesson. So without further ado, it is still summer here in Ontario, and we're not back at school yet. So I think we're gonna get a little inappropriate.
Yeah, so you're seeing the two different types of chocolate right now, and you're seeing three in each of these cups. But Kyle, I think, you know what? Strip them down.
Bang. Oh, there it is. Look at that. You've got three chocolate pumpkins. That's what John was eating on the left. And we got three Hershey's Kisses on the right. That's what I was eating. And what we want to do here, like, what are we going to do next? Like, why did we strip these down there, John?
How's that? Because we're going to melt them. Melt them down.
Bang. Interesting. So you're seeing the volume of three chocolate pumpkins on the left and the volume of three Hershey Kisses on the right. We're going to give you one more piece of information.
You might want to, I guess, you can jot that down right now, but you're going to have another slide coming up where you can jot it. We want you to actually do a little bit of math tonight.
Yeah, we're going to have you do a little bit of math with us. Don't worry. This information's coming back at you. We also wanted to share with you the total volume of pumpkins that John ate and the total volume of Hershey's Kisses that I ate. There's the volume for the three pumpkins on the left and the volume for the three kisses on the right, as well as our total volumes above. I'm going to give you a moment here to jot those down.
And then take a moment, do a little bit of work on this, and you can put some answers if you want, but also maybe some strategies of how you did it in the chat window. We would love to see that from you guys, just like we do from our students.
Interesting. Rebecca's saying, could you use mass instead? That's the beauty of these types of problems, is that you don't have to give the information that we're giving. You get to decide. It's just the hard work is withholding the information right from the get-go. And then you can go ahead and determine what you want to give students.
Yeah. Janice brings up a good question. She says, do you ever abandon where you were intending to go because of the group of students who are passionate about their question and then they won't let it go? Like I always encourage them to pursue that, but I also keep them on track for doing, you know, we're trying to also get the lesson goal out into the open for analysis in this particular lesson, but we always cycle back to explore other things later on. So we make notes of that, but good question, Janice. I think lots of teachers might say yes to that. I'm always in my high school class, I'm always kind of steering them into the one way. And when we cycle back to look, analyze the other ways after the learning goals kind of out in the open.
Yeah, and I think too, it really, you know, I've been using the word "it depends" or the statement "it depends" all the time now when I'm in a workshop, because there really is no hard, fast rule. Like Rebecca says, could you use mass instead? And the answer is absolutely. I could give mass instead. Like if that's the question, the burning question, I can still get me to the learning goal, my intended learning goal for that particular lesson. Or maybe their question might actually help us to determine the question that I want to ask anyway. So if it's a question that's actually more elaborate, we might have to go through my ideal line of questioning to get to where they want to be anyway. So oftentimes there's ways that we can ensure and we can still honor that student voice and give them that choice. All right, so we're seeing some values coming in here. Typically what we try to do, we're so crunched for time, we would use like an online tool to help you take photos and share them with us. Right. We definitely encourage you to put them up on Twitter with the hashtag MakeMathMoments. That would be great.
Right. And with our students, the same thing. Like I know in my room, I have whiteboards around the borders of my room. My students are doing these at the wall. I'm visiting, you know, group to group. Most of the time I'm using the five practices for orchestrating productive mathematical discussions resource to help me facilitate all of this, to get that out into the open. So there's lots of ways you can go about that, but those are kind of my go-tos.
And then we also get oftentimes like a lot of questions we'll get from teachers is like, okay, so what about those students that are going to come up with that answer right away? Maybe they're like really, really, they're at a place where they have a deep procedural fluency here. Maybe they're not showing a whole lot of their work. I'm going to make sure that, first of all, that they have a conceptual understanding. So can they really model what it is that they're doing, and can they articulate that to me? But then also, we're going to have some questions in mind to help challenge some of those students. So this might just be us walking group to group as they're working at the whiteboards and just asking them things verbally. Or maybe you feel more comfortable having them written down on a piece of paper just so that you know that you're ready for it. But like, here's an example or a couple example problems that we could be giving some of our students to kind of challenge and push them further.
Yeah, almost like a progression of ideas that can keep them into the flow.
Absolutely. So this is all part of that anticipation stage. But in order for us to get right to that fueling sense-making, we want to unpack some of these solutions. We've only got about 7 minutes to do so if we want to do a nice job at least unpacking the framework. So we're going to go ahead and give you that link right in the chat pod to check out the conclusion.
This is the video of us answering, just like flipping to the back of the book.
Yeah. So we're going to do this act three here. We're going to give you that satisfaction to check that out. And then we're going to dive into some of the consolidation that we would do with students with this
task. We'll give you about a minute there. I think the video is a minute.
Awesome. All right, as you come to the conclusion of that video, we'll encourage a few of you just to, in the chat, say back or awesome, celebration, whatever you're feeling right now.
Right.
Share it with the world. Katie's putting her hand on. She's back.
Now, somebody up above did notice that I ate twice the amount of chocolate that you ate, Kyle.
And there's definitely a connection there.
You're right, Sam. Sam, after that, we regretted eating that chocolate, especially since I ate double the amount of chocolate that he did. That last piece was rough.
Yeah, it was. It was really, really bad. But we found out later that despite the fact that I ate half the volume of chocolate, it was almost the same number of calories.
We looked it up on the bag, yeah.
Which is interesting. Think of like the fun discussion and the great math you could do with students. Like, does like what about density? Like, how does that impact? Or like just the quality of the chocolate? Right. Like, what was John eating? If I was eating sugar, and what was he eating? I have no idea. But that's pretty intense. So what we want to do is really spend a little bit of time here. I know we're going to run out of time. It's saddening. It's hurting my soul that we're going to run out of time. How does this happen to us,
John? Probably only got time for maybe two different strategies to unpack here for the fueling sense making. And just before Kyle starts to talk about that, like remember that we built, like this is at, like we're doing this on the fly with students before they see the video you just saw. So we're kind of doing it out of order the way we would do it with students. And we're going to show you a couple strategies of how we fuel sense making. And we want to reiterate the fact that, you know, we used to spend time sparking their curiosity, but then failed to actually connect ideas together. And there's a couple examples here we're going to show you on how we connect ideas together to really hit home here to make math moments that matter.
Yeah, and I think it's really important too to note that like we can't show every solution strategy. We want the students. We want to model student work. So again, going back to the five practices that John had mentioned before, like we want to be like monitoring, selecting, and sequencing student work. And then we're there to kind of push that learning forward. So I'm anticipating what I might see. And then I'm thinking about like, what's the next step that I can offer students to kind of help them in their journey? So for some students, like this might be like a concrete, like they need a little bit of concrete visuals here. So like they might have to like go additively and like adding, you know, cups of three over and over again to get somewhere close to that total. Oh, this is a little bit too far. We're going to have to like go back a little bit. And then, you know, we'll do the same over here. We end up, oh, we're a little bit too far. And now we're a little bit closer there. So we're just backing up. Okay. And that might be like close enough depending on the student and where they're at in their learning journey. We could also take like a cup and get students to take those 17 milliliters and do a little bit of work and those eight and a half milliliters and actually have to do some fair sharing here to actually do some work with fractions, right? And bringing back some of these concepts that students tend to struggle with. Like maybe that's what my learning goal is really going to focus on today. It really just depends on the students and who I'm working with. So in this particular case, we've got a scenario here where I can even get down to the fact where now I can add individual chocolates to kind of make up the difference and get really close to that total volume. So that's like a pretty early approach here that we might use in the classroom. If we're moving on, I'm going to skip over that, John, sorry, just from time. Like some students might be looking at things like using arrays. They might be really comfortable with arrays. Like we can actually think about proportional relationships using arrays, like in thinking about the double array model, which is totally a made up thing that I sort of came across. But if I look at it, really, when we're dealing with the proportion, all I need to think about it in two different units. So instead of three pumpkins and my 6.5 cups or so, I can actually look at the same model, but now I can think of it as 17 milliliters. And because I know the total volume, I can actually use that same multiplicative relationship to help me get my 20 pumpkins. In some classrooms, this might look more like an area model. So like the double area model to help us get there just by changing our units. So that's some of the work that we can be doing along the way. This one here, I'm gonna let John talk a little bit about our double number line. So after you're done doing some of those models, maybe you might move to something a little more abstract where here we don't really see that area. We don't really see the set anymore, but we see the double number line.
Right. So when we're looking at the double number line, I love the double number line because we can on the bottom or on one side, excuse me, write one quantity. On the other, we can write the other quantity. We can see those similar relationships that we saw in the area model and the array models that Kyle just talked about. And I love making those connections between the two with my students. But we can also see those same numbers pop out here when we go to look at the relationship between, like, if there are, we can. I think, Kyle, what's the next picture look like? I can't
trying
even see
get there.
It.
This slide sort of
the slide is it's
I'm gonna try
slow to... on us right now.
Yeah, it's coming. All right, let me just do that and see if I can get there.
Right. Boop, 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 yeah, boop, let's boop, speed boop, that boop. Up. That's probably a faster way to do this.
Yes. There we go. Whoa, here we are. All right.
So it's like I've had students when I present the double number line, I love that they count up. It's like they're using their additive strategies. So I'm going to go 3, 6, 9. They add up on the other side and they realize, hey, that's not going to work exactly. Let's now think about a multiplicative strategy. And they're going to go from 3 or from 17 up to 111.6. Well, how many of those fit in there? Those same number has to fit in the cups or the chocolates on the bottom, and we can look at that multiplier and find the scale factor. And that 6.56 has popped out in a couple different spots. Like, I love when that happens with my students, and we can connect. Like, you got 6.56 on your strategy.
What is that number?
And like, you did too. What's going on there? Like, I love that conversation you can have when the students show you those strategies. So, some of my students did those same types of things. I think we're gonna jump right. Like, we used this funny thing I saw in the comment too that. And it depends on the learning goal. And this task we've used in different spots. Like, we've used it for the proportion work that you just saw, but I've also used it to talk about linear relations and create equations and get more abstract. So one way to go from very concrete to very abstract is a nice progression of ideas.
Yeah, it's beautiful that you can actually come back to the concept over time, right? So that's something that's really, really cool to see. This slide sorter is going to be killing us here at the end. So, you know, we had also mentioned that there's actually a volume relationship here that we're not going to get into today, but there are some resources in that link that we're going to share again. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to skip over some of these slides. I don't think we can. Yeah,
we're going to skip over this because we're gonna give you the resources because we got to let you get on with your night here, wrap up. But we want to give you the link again so that you could download the video and the other resources that we're presenting here.
Yeah, like, so everyone just close your eyes for like 10 seconds here as John just flies through these slides.
Kelly, you want to talk about this slide for a minute?
Awesome. So what we want to do here, we wanted to take these last couple minutes because we certainly don't want you walking away feeling like you didn't have some sort. We talked about consolidation. We want to consolidate this idea. And this three-part framework, tonight we spent a lot of time around sparking curiosity, the importance of getting students in. Like, this is to get their attention. We need their attention in order to do any sort of meaningful math learning. But sadly, I focused only on getting attention for a really long time. And then I realized that there's so much math. And Dan Myers said it a few times, like, did I leave any math on the table? And it's like, I left it there all the time, like, not without fail. I was leaving these opportunities to make connections. And that's where fueling sense making comes in. And then finally, the last one that we're not going to get some time to really dive deeply into is this idea of igniting your next move. And these are your before moves. Like, what are we doing before the lesson even begins to get ourselves in the right frame of mind and to prepare ourselves for what students might do in our class? And then the during moves, like, what am I doing in class? And then finally, what am I doing the next move? Like, where do I go next? And we feel like if we take these three pieces and if we dive deep into each one and build a deep understanding of each of these, we can make math moments that matter for our students on a daily basis. This isn't luck. Like John said earlier, we can actually make these opportunities, make these memories with our students. So tonight we talked specifically about sparking curiosity and fueling sense making. We've got a bunch of templates ready for you in our resource pack that you're going to get tonight. And we've got about 1 or 2 minutes left. So I thought maybe we would open it up to the chat as well as to Paula so she can sort of wrap things up for us. And I'm going to put that link right back in the chat box because, again, as I mentioned, in a couple weeks' time, we're going to have a surprise coming, and it will go out on social media as well. But if you add your email to this link that we're going to share with you, not only will you get the resources for tonight, but you'll also be first to be notified for when this little surprise comes in, because we really want to dive deeply into this three-part framework with all of you, because tonight we're just scratching the surface, and we're just so excited to share it out.
Right. Okay, so... So in the chat window, and I think Paula, back to you.
Thanks, guys. Okay, so I know that they're willing to stay and answer questions, but I just want to remind people before we actually wrap up that we will be here again next week. Next week, we'll be looking at designing curriculum that treats students as sense makers with David Wiese. And I'm going to give the chat a few more minutes before I turn the recording off, and then a reminder, if you or someone that you work with that you think needs to see this would like to see it, it should be available in a couple of hours after the recording has been turned off. So if you have more questions, feel free, as John and Kyle both already offered, to keep posting those in the chat window. And I'm just going to let the recording go a little bit longer.
All right. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us there. So nice to see so many of you and many of the new faces that were in there. It was a pleasure working with you all. Again, we were sort of going a little faster than we would have liked.
I felt like I was racing there at the end.
Yeah. And we apologize there, the slide deck at the end. But again, so so happy to have the opportunity to share it with an amazing community of learners through the Global Math Department. And again, thanks so much to the team that dedicates their free time to putting on this amazing opportunity for us to all learn from one another. Hopefully we'll see you around Twitter and the Math Twitter blogosphere. So I think we'll sign off on the mic for now, and we'll stick around the chat. So if there's any questions, feel free to fire them in here or fire them up on Twitter. And we look forward to staying in touch.
There's a couple of questions in here, guys, if you want to field them. One was Ruth asking, how often do you recommend doing this, especially if you're tied to a certain curriculum? And then the other one was by Kirsten asking, how do we get the resources?
excuse me, I'll address the first question. Like, that's a great question. Like, how often do we do this? I'm always like, Kyle and I, we've talked a lot about that question, and I'm always a big fan of doing it, doing a lesson like this at the beginning of every big idea. So are we doing this every single day? Not every single day. There's a lot of days that you're going to schedule to, you know, do some practice of the concepts that you brought out into the open on this kind of lesson. So I'm always saying, like, if I'm going to talk about how to connect these two ideas of a linear relation together, I'm going to do this task. And then it depends on when the next one is, but definitely big ideas, and especially early in the course. So I'm doing a lot of big ideas up front, and then we cycle back to them a little bit later. But a lot of these come early in the course on a regular basis for me.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other piece is that, like, a lesson like we just did here might give you the misconception that, like, every day's got to have this, like, really unique video, or it's got to be something that you've created. But the reality is that, you know, people think, like, kids are interested because John's in the video, like Mr. Orr's in the video, so that's why they care. And I'm going to say, like, my kids actually enjoyed other people more than they enjoyed me. It was almost like they were bored of seeing, you know, me in a video. And on some days, I can use a lot of the elements of sparking curiosity. Like, we talked a lot about withholding information and building anticipation. We can do that with a standard old word problem just by doing things like covering things up or just presenting it a little bit differently instead of giving it to them all at once. So it doesn't always have to be a video. Making it visual is obviously a huge, huge help. So even going into Keynote and creating some sort of visual that might spark some of that conversation, I think that's really important to try to do as often as possible. But it doesn't need to be this big, you know, huge event with fireworks and so forth on it every single day sort of basis.
Right. And the other, to address the other question about getting the resources, the links we put into the chat window, makemathmoments.com. It's a website we put up so that we could get them to you. If you go there, right at the top of the screen, there's to the right, there's a black kind of box that says grab the resources. And then there's a spot for you to put your name and your email. And if you click get the resources, you should be sent almost immediately the email you write in there, which has a thank you email from us, the resources that we outlined here on a Google Doc, but also a couple other bonuses that you'll find in there.
So again, thanks guys. Unless anyone else, I haven't seen any other questions posted. I do like to respect always the presenter's time. So I would like to let them go enjoy the rest of their evening.
Awesome.
Thanks, Paula.
That's amazing. Thanks for your time, Paul. We really appreciate all the help.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay. We're signing off. Have a great night, everybody. And we will see you online.
Take care.